Welcome to the Endurance Horse Podcast, where endurance riders from all across the globe gather, sharing their stories, goals, and progress as they train for and compete in endurance events at every level. So kick off your shoes, pull up a chair, and listen as we gather around the virtual campfire and listen to friends from across the world.
Welcome to another episode of the Endurance Horse Podcast. Today, we are honored to have a true legend in the world of horsemanship with us. Our guest is a member of the Cowgirl Hall of Fame. She made history by being the first woman to win the iconic Road to the Horse competition. In that same year, she also rode to her unforgettable winning ride at the AQHA Freestyle Reining that left the audience in tears as she dedicated her freestyle ride to her father. She did this ride with no saddle and no bridle. Her freestyle video is still touching hearts around the world and can be seen on YouTube. That's right. You probably guessed it. Today, we're joined by Stacy Westfall. Stacy's list of accomplishments is awe-inspiring. Beyond her historic win at Road to the Horse, she also earned her bronze medal in dressage, as well as 5 Western Dressage World Championships. Though for me, it is not the wins that make Stacy a remarkable trainer. It is the soulful and thoughtful way she approaches horses and communication that she builds with them. Stacy is the founder of the Resourceful Rider online training program. She is the host of the popular podcast, Train Your Own Horse with Stacy Westfall. And she has a treasure trove of wisdom on her YouTube channel. Check it out today. But first, listen in as Stacy and I discuss horses and a little bit about running. I know you will enjoy hearing from this amazing horsewoman who inspires and empowers riders everywhere to train their own horse. Welcome, Stacy, to Endurance Horse Podcast. Good morning, Stacy, and welcome to Endurance Horse Podcast. I hear that you are doing the virtual Tevis this year.
I am. Good morning to you, and thank you for having me. I am excited. I've already learned more about Tevis in the last week than I knew, which just means that I have a lot more I can learn. But yes, the virtual Tevis, Denny Emerson posted something about it, and I was like, no way! That's something that exists in the world, and so very excited to basically turn my focus just to learning more about this entire event. Obviously, I'm going through the virtual, which my horses are thanking me for already.
Hmm. Yeah, would you ever consider doing a limited distance ride or endurance ride?
Yes, I think it's so fascinating how as soon as you turn your mind towards something, how opportunities start to open up to you. And I'm not kidding. I signed up for the virtual Tevis, started making some posts about it, headed out. I live right behind a state park, and we moved here so that I could trail ride on the state park. And so I headed out, and who do I meet up with but a person who has actually ridden in the Tevis Cup before and is planning for 4 years from now. And I was like, really? This is how it works? As soon as you open yourself up to it, it just starts kind of coming together. And I asked her about what I could potentially wear if I decide I want to ride in the rain, because full confession, up till now, I've been more of a fair weather rider. I stay in the indoor if it's raining, and I go on the trails when it's really pretty. But one of the things I want to experiment with during this is, like, I can ride in the rain, but what are my options? Mm-hmm. And it might just be that I get wet, and it might just be that I figure out some other options. So we'll see. But I asked her, and she sent me a message with the information. And then I asked her about what there were for options around here, knowing that it's me and my little 14-1 quarter horse, and how would we get started in this? And so, yes, I'm already experimenting with what those next steps would be.
Do you know, I call those instances like little notes from God that I'm in the right direction, or maybe confidence ribbons, because when you start doing distance riding, you'll see that they would maybe mark the trail with a pink ribbon, and you might be out there for a little while going, wow, is this even the right trail? Because sometimes it's not. And so you'll see a confidence ribbon that says, yes, you're still going the right way. And that's just like a flood of like good endorphins and dopamine going, yeah, thank God, because I thought I was lost, you know? So I think we get those in life where we're going along, and you know, Denny Emerson posted something about endurance, and then you know, you signed up for this and you go out and ride and right away you meet somebody. And then I call those confidence ribbons, you know, that we're headed the right way. Mm-hmm.
I love that.
I thank God that he puts them out there, you know?
Yes, for sure. I love that. I love that. And I can already see where several years ago I decided to, and outside of horseback riding, I've never participated in any version of an organized sport or anything that looked like it required a lot of physical exercise, again, outside of horses. That I'll do whatever. But I noticed I needed to get more fit, so I started jogging, couch to 5K kind of style. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I was like, I want to do a 5K. And so did all of the work, which was a huge amount of mindset, way more than I thought it was, and did my first 5K, then did some more, and then decided to do a 10K. And I can already see the overlap between having done that mentally and physically, but really mentally between that and what I can see when I start looking more closely at endurance riding.
So that's so funny that you say that, Stacy, because this podcast exists because I started running. And then I was listening to a running podcast. And so if you listen to this podcast from the beginning, it was just people sending me audio and I stitched it together and I barely talked on it. I just put this out to the world and people liked it. And then we actually started the Warhorse Endurance Challenges during COVID lockdown. And that started the virtual 100s in the horse world. And actually, Krista from the Tevis virtual, before they started that, they contacted me for some tips on starting that one. But wow, they have that's kind of one of those things where it just kind of all started stringing together. So that's hilarious that you mentioned running, because all of this started from me trying to relieve stress by going running. And I'm not very good at it. I tend to be towards the end. But the point is reaching a goal. There is so much overlap between conditioning a horse, I think, and conditioning your own body. And if you, I don't know if you do intervals or if you run straight through, but the interval training that, like Jeff Galloway does, that run, walk, run applies to horses so well.
Yes. So I started with the Couch to 5K app, which is a walk, run, and it really does start you. I haven't done the beginning of it for a while, but I think it's like you walk for 2 or 3 minutes and you jog for 30 seconds. It's very, very easy beginning. It eases you in nicely. And then once I got to a certain point, I actually ended up on Jeff Galloway's website and used his plan and just really could see how that's the plan that I used to go from the 5K to the 10K. And I love that I did that with my own body. I'd already been training horses and riding horses, and I could see what I was doing with the horses, but to do it with myself was fascinating because there's just a different understanding of it that I picked up. And yeah, so it's really fun to do it both. So I admire the people that do the Tevis Cup and the horses that do the Tevis Cup. I'm just still in the jaw drop moment of, wow, that is amazing.
I'm just over here smiling because you know who Jeff Galloway is, and because I just love him. It was his, there's a podcast called The Extra Mile Podcast, and that's the one we fashioned in the beginning. We started off of, because I was recording for that podcast just to say, hey, this is how my 5K training is going. And I was riding our horse Houdini at the time. And I was like, oh, horse people need this. And that's why we started this. Mm-hmm. It goes back to Jeff Galloway, Olympic runner, who doesn't maybe even realize it, but he affected endurance. You know?
Yeah, when I was making a video, because I'm going to make sure to do some along the way and post them on Facebook and things, and I actually started recording talking about negative splits, and I was like, you know, that's going to have to be its own thing. Yeah. But my thought was, with my own horse, there's that temptation to, you know, today is the opening day of the virtual Tevis, and there's this temptation to go strong, go hard, go for it, kind of whatever version of that that wants to pop up in my brain. And so before I even got to today, I was already thinking, if I'm at the end of this, how do I want to have done it? Mm-hmm. And the first thought that I had because I'd done the running was, how could I do negative splits? So how could I start easy so that this month versus next month versus next month, that I'm actually kind of snowballing in that direction versus blasting out of the starting gate and then being like, whoa, that's way too strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, negative splits are a thing. And the whole, I think it applies to horses, how Jeff talks about the reason run, walk, run works is because you never get that huge store of lactic acid in the muscles. All you get is the endorphins. Mm-hmm. And I admit, when I first started out with distance riding, I just let the horse kind of make too many decisions. And this is the part that I think we'll talk about with training horses later, is they were just very on the bit. And I thought, okay, in a few miles, they'll settle back down. But that's not how we should handle that at all. And mm-hmm. the Jeff Galloway stuff really applied. I saw my friend's mare calm down immensely because of the run, walk, run method of riding. We did like 2 minutes of moving along, whichever pace, you know, trotting or cantering, and then 1 minute of walking. And she had had a very high-strung mm-hmm. mare who loved that. It's like she knew what was coming. She was Anglo-Arabian, and she just had a very up mentality and got herself very emotional. And doing run, walk, run completely calmed her down and helped her finish mm-hmm. really strongly, because she never got that extra buildup of lactic acid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's fascinating because what I hear there is you've got the physical side with the lactic acid, which, when I finally read about long, slow distances when you're practicing human running, and they were saying butterflies should be passing you, and I thought, I can do that. And so that's what made adding distance for me, that's what made the distance a doable thought, was because I thought, okay, I'm supposed to be going this slow. I'm not doing it wrong if I'm going this slow. And then over time, you start to, it's almost hard to stay slow when you've been really truly building that base. But what I hear you saying in here that I think people often overlook is the habit pattern that we develop with the horses, and the habit pattern of like walk, we'll just say walk, trot, or speed mm-hmm. slow. The habit pattern of doing that is what often creeps back in to the mental side of the horse. So for me, a lot of the horse training is, we're going to interpret everything. I think of it like this. We've got rider's mind, rider's body, horse's mind, horse's body. But the challenge is, we are interpreting the horse's mind through the horse's body. And we are looking at the horse's body, as in respiration rate is their body, but their mind, the way they think, is also reflected in their body. So the challenge becomes, like, how do we see their mind? And what you just described is when the horse starts to see a pattern, walk, trot, walk, trot, and they start to predict it, that we know they're predicting it when they start to do what you described of relaxing into that habit pattern.
Because I think sometimes if they're just chasing along with the other horses, that's like the biggest mistake I think I made in the beginning, was I had my horses emotionally attached to this new horse. And pretty soon you're not riding your horse anymore. You're being drug along with that horse. So what I had started doing was saying, I don't care about points. I don't care about placings. I care about my horse. So everybody can just leave, and I'll wait till they're gone, and then I will leave. And so I started doing that and just kind of emotionally telling my horse, you know what, we're just riding around the campgrounds. We're just riding around, and I'd be looking over my shoulder waiting for, you know, them to yell trail open and then everybody leave, you know, and then I would go out. Because otherwise, Yeah, did you know they can rear while they're cantering? I mean, that happened to me before. That was exciting. So that was like my first 50 miler. My friend Sherry and I were going to ride next to each other, and she had a Morab, beautiful, wonderful, successful little Morab, and we were going to go out together. And I have mostly Tricaners, but I also have this saddlebred Belgian cross, and who did pretty well at LDs, but I was going to try him in a 50, and he got uncharacteristically hyped up because I left with her and at a canter. The 17-2 hand horse reared up next to her at a canter, and I was like, oh, this is the last time I'm starting with the group. Like, this is just not happening again. Because of how scared she was. But that kind of segues well into what I thought your expertise would be great at, which is emotional training of our horses. A lot of endurance riders come into this sport, like maybe they started out taking jumping lessons and then they came over to endurance, you know. And so everybody comes from different backgrounds. And we do throw a lot of challenges at our horses, and they're more than capable of rising to the occasion. And I was going to make a little bit of a joke about we have a bridleless theme going on Endurance Horse Podcast for 2024. Yes. Because of your great bridleless achievement, your horses. And we just had Jeremy Reynolds on here, who won the Tevis with no bridle. It had been done with no bridle.
I was really impressed last year.
My goal with this podcast is not to like, oh, wow, Chris has this theme of no bridle. No, we don't want an army of bridleless endurance riders running through the forest. But what your specialty is, I feel like, communication and building up communication and planning ahead. You have such a treasure of videos and resources and books that you've created. I was just amazed, honestly, at how much content you've created. It's awesome content. But how you're taking your horses, if you're showing dressage or if you're showing ranch or reining, and you're on purpose, you know, doing emotional training. And I wonder if we're all so excited to go camping and cover all these miles and beautiful places and see all of our friends, if we sometimes aren't missing out on the emotional part of the horse, because ride camp can be exciting and energy charged. And how can we, as camping endurance riders, how can we start to emotionally prepare our horse to handle all of this better?
I know that I grew up I just wanted to be on the trails only. We didn't have any version of an arena. I didn't see any point in an arena. I didn't see any point in groundwork. I was firmly under the impression that I could get stepped on far easier on the ground. So mm-hmm. I just wanted to get on top. And so I have a solid understanding of, like, just wanting to jump on and go. And meaning, like, I truly desired that. And now, with a lot more information and quite a few more years, I don't bounce as well. So it's more motivating to be able to stay on top. It's more motivating to be able to have a horse that's quiet and calm. And the reason I bring all that up is because it's just a different skill set to practice doing, let's say, groundwork for emotional control and arena work for emotional control. And I just look at it like different ways that we're going to communicate with the horse for the purpose of being able to go do whatever it is we want to do, which could be out on the trails or it could be showing. So in my mind, I love to picture it like a big, beautiful oak tree with this huge trunk. And this solid, big trunk that's pulling all the nutrients out of the ground, this trunk is like the base of what the horses in all disciplines really benefit from. And then as we start to go out the different branches, we can start to get to the more and more specialized nuances of things. But to me, because I love looking at all these different disciplines, or you could call it training styles or whatever you want to do, I want to see how much of that base or that trunk is similar. And then I'll acknowledge that there are differences to get to some of the different endpoints. But to start with, it would be, can you stretch your brain to see the similarities of what you could create in groundwork, in arena work, and in work out on the trail? Because your mind has to go be able to stretch across those before you're going to be able to get it to quote unquote work when you go out there with your horse.
But most definitely, it helps that you're like acknowledging up front, you understand that, hey, I want to ride. And so I want to just, there's the trail right outside my door. I just want to go do that. Because sometimes we don't always have a bunch of time to ride. And that's like with the war horse challenges I was emphasizing to people, and maybe you see this too, where they think, and I don't know how this got instilled in my head growing up, but it was like, well, if I'm going to go work my horse, I better have 1 or 2 hours, you know, for the saddling, the unsaddling, the grooming, everything. In my head, if I didn't have that block of time, then I might as well not go out. But I switched that thinking to 15 minutes is pretty good. You know, 15 minutes is actually of walking at a good pace. That's a mile. And if you did a mile every day, you have 30 miles at the end of the month, you know. And I had I have a mare that is, you know, I'm reading your book right now, Start Smart, because I have a 4-year-old to start. And I liked your balancing diagram where you had the horse at zero, and that some horses, you know, they're a little hotter, some horses are a little quieter, and that you're trying to get that horse in balance. And she's definitely towards the hotter end. And all those little days where I only had 15 minutes, that really turned into 30 minutes. But she became such a quiet horse that my husband got on her, my son was riding her, and it was just that repetition of just showing up, even if it was 15 minutes, because I think that stops a lot of people. I don't have an hour. I don't have 2 hours. And so they don't go out there and work on building up those common tree trunks of training.
Yeah. And it's interesting because when you bring up, you know, colt starting, or I go out here and because I live behind a state park, I'm meeting people on the trails all the time. And so I'm seeing horses of all varying levels, from whether I'm ponying one while I'm riding out there or I run into somebody ponying one, I can see all different stages. And those 15 minutes, it, as you said, you can use it and you can think, okay, in 15 minutes, I'm going to go a certain amount of distance. And there's a certain amount of fitness that builds up over the month. And so when I started my podcast, my first thought was, how can I explain that tree trunk more clearly? So I thought of rider's mind, rider's body, horse's mind, horse's body. So when I hear you talking about what you did to go from essentially, if I don't have, let's just say, you know, an hour and a half or hour, whatever it is, whichever one, if I don't have at least an hour, it's kind of not worth it. Well, that's the rider's mind that's thinking there. And then at some point you switched and you were like, there is something of value in the 15 minutes. Well, in that, you can see that the brain, the rider's mind, can start to value the smaller 15 minutes. Ironically, the like rider's body and the horse's body can benefit from those smaller things. The horse's mind often benefits from learning in those smaller chunks. And right now, we haven't even started to touch the idea that inside of a very short, I'm talking like a 5-minute session, you and your horse can address or have the conversation, because I love the idea that it feels like I'm having a conversation with my horse, but like you have a certain perception of what the bridle reins are used for and how you want your horse to respond. And when I'm out on the trail, it's a lot more of a, let's just call it like a noisier environment, because there's a lot of input from everything around, versus if I walk into the stall or I walk into the paddock or the round pen or whatever normal small area, like just some common, I don't care if it's the barn aisleway. And there's just this, like, you can pick up on the halter and ask and get a response. And so what you're doing in that little micro moment is you're looking at your perception of the bridle rein, or I just use the halter as another example, and your horse's response in a controlled environment. And if I were going to say one thing that's really different between doing work in an arena at home versus out on the trail, is you do have a more known, stable, or controlled environment, no matter if you're riding in your pasture, your driveway, or, you know, a round pen or an arena. And that is where a lot of times when things quiet down, meaning the external stimulation of not having everything you run into on the trail or the other horses or the trail that draws the horse down the trail with that forward motion created by the draw of the trail. When you are in the arena and it's sort of this quieter environment, that's when you get to hear the conversation or see your horse and yourself. And that's where the language can be really revealed, and it's the best place to build it.
So, Stacy, you told me about one of your clients named Heather who does do endurance, and you were able to help her successfully with her horse. Could you share a story?
Yeah, I actually have several endurance riders that are in my program. Heather's been in there and been really active, and she's shared a lot of different success stories, and it's fun to work with somebody over time. And it is very rewarding, as I talked earlier about the tree trunk and then the branches. And I think if I share one of her success stories, you can really kind of hear how this would fit into individual. And I want you to still be able to go out and do the thing you want to do, whether that is endurance riding, or for me, it's been like reining and Western dressage and trail riding and mounted shooting and all these different things that I've just been curious about. So it's not that we're not headed to the end goal. It's very much that we're headed to the end goal. It's saying, this is the thing I want to know. How can I support my horse in moments that are going to be challenging in fill in the blank with whatever discipline you want to do? Mm-hmm. So one of Heather's success stories that she wrote in and shared was, last night, I had a moment that could have seemed very ordinary, but because of my increased awareness about all the little details of my horse and how she thinks, I recognized it as a huge win. This time of year, we ride a lot when it's getting dark, and we often finish when it is dark. Last year, around this time, I realized that the confidence Amelia had found in the daylight in various circumstances was still shaky as it got dark. This year, when daylight savings happened and we started riding more and more in the dark, I could only feel little wobbles in her confidence. When she isn't certain, she loses forward motion. We've been working with canter transitions and being willing to step right up into the canter while I'm holding collection and positioning her head, neck, and hips. So last night, we rode as it was getting dark. And there's a new temporary electric fence that's been put up on one side of the farm road we're on, and it has a red blinking light that's super obvious as it gets dark. She questioned it and then moved right on. Next, on the other side, there were about a dozen deer hanging out about 100 feet off the road. She was so with me. I wanted to practice canter departs, not on a circle, particularly to the left, which is her harder side. She let me easily position her and stayed calm, quiet, and held lovely contact. When I asked, she stepped up perfectly into the left lead, right between the flashing red light and the deer. Hmm. When I share this one short success story, she's shared many of them over the years. What I know she's been working on is she has a horse that wants to, you know, evade the bit or back off or be, you know, a lot of horses don't know how to properly respond to the aids, and they get anxious about the aids if they don't understand it. It's almost like if you don't understand a foreign language and somebody starts speaking French to you, you mm-hmm. get a little anxious about, I don't know the answer here. On top of that, a lot of times when we go to position the horse with the aids, a lot of times what the rider doesn't realize is that the horse, when you add some bend, which can be a very good thing for your safety, can also challenge their balance. And so then you've got a horse that feels their balance is challenged, who already is in a situation like, you know, the electric fence, the deer, all that, it's getting dark, an emotional kind of situation. If you've been working on those foundation pieces, like your different language, and you're getting more and more confident in speaking French, then when you're in that more stressful situation, it doesn't feel like the thing that throws you over the edge. It feels more like, wait a minute, I actually know the answer to this. And the better you know the language, the better the horse understands the cue system as a language. Instead of them acting defensively like, ah, I need my face back, I'm about to lose my balance, like, what's happening here? And there's this and there's that. They can actually hear you, and they can actually respond, and they can begin to see you and perceive you as a help, not a hindrance.
Stacey, can you tell me what this program is that you're working with her on?
Yeah, it opens several times a year.
Okay.
And basically what it is, it's, I call it the Resourceful Rider Program. And inside of it, I teach people the mindset work, which is what Heather was referring to when she talked about, you know, this could have seemed very ordinary, but my increased awareness about all the details. Mm-hmm. So I really talk to riders about their mind, but also we also do a lot about what the actual building blocks are of these. What is the tree trunk? What are the aids? What is that tree trunk? How can we teach them in this controlled environment where the rider can see the point? It's almost like if you're going to be the person that starts teaching a language, then you're going to need to review the steps that you would begin teaching a foreign language. And so it's like the riders are getting an understanding of it, and then they're teaching their horses. And so inside the program, I'm teaching you how to train your horse.
So what does that look like? Say I sign up for your program. Is this a so many times a week thing, or do you interact with people? Is it pre-recorded, or how does it look?
Yeah, great question. So right now, when you join, it's lifetime access. So when you buy it, you have lifetime access to all the material that's in there, and that includes some of the pre-recorded. So the way that I look at a horse going through training, I oftentimes want to say that they go through elementary school, high school, and college, and that ends up being pretty critical with how you train the horse, because things change when you get to a college level of responsibility with the horse versus elementary level. So I laid out the program, and I show how a horse's very first ride looks. So you get to see how I'm using my aids on the very first ride on a horse, and how I can use the same aids on a horse in high school and in college. So you're starting to see kind of the through line, and that's done through the pre-recorded courses. And then to make the course come even more to life, I offer Zoom calls. And so this bonus of these Zoom calls means that you come in, and every single week I'm in there answering questions. And one of my favorite things, and at this point there's hundreds of video reviews, but one of my favorite things is that you could send in a video riding your horse, doing one of these patterns, doing one of these techniques. And then together we watch it, and we look at what your horse is doing. Like, what's the horse's response? What aids are you using? How are you interpreting what the horse is responding? And what's that next step for you? And because that's happening in a group coaching situation, a lot of riders report they're able to see more clearly when it's not them, which is kind of funny because I also get the riders who are sending the videos, and they most consistently report that they love doing it and that they watch it again, because there's a difference between being in the moment of getting coached and then watching yourself being coached. Which, one massive tip I have for people, if you're going to ride in your arena and do anything, it's like, the tip is this: set a video camera up and record yourself for 5 minutes. Because when you do that, you're going to be able to watch yourself from that outside viewpoint that you would get if you took a riding lesson or something. And you can begin to see where maybe you're misinterpreting something, or maybe you could support your horse a little bit more with a certain aid, or maybe you're blocking them with a different aid. And so that we do every week there's a teaching element and this a lot of video reviews and just answering questions as they come up, which to me feels like a conversational way of covering the same information, but because it's reviewing people's rides, it's got a different flavor than you watching the pre-recorded. And then in the Mindset Mastery, we do specific topics for looking at how you create success or looking at how your emotions can help you or hinder you. And then inside that, you have the chance to do written coaching so you can write in your question and get a written coaching response, and all of that's done anonymously. So you can bring any of your challenges that you're having and get a written perspective that's not going to be about use more left rein or use more leg. It's going to be more about what's coming up for you in this situation. When your horse does this, how are you responding? What emotion comes up for you? And between those, that's what really starts to move the needle for people. Because a lot of times people feel like something is unachievable because of the way that they're mentally approaching it. Back to that rider's mind, mm-hmm. Your perception of how things are going will really influence your ability to keep going, which is what my 5K running was. It taught me that it was actually harder for me to separate that hard physical experience and the hard mental experience. My skill set of learning how to separate those two was life-changing.
Mm-hmm. Where would they sign up, and what would they look for on your website?
When the program is closed, there's a wait list where you can put your email in, and then you'll get notified when it opens. And so if you go over to stacywestfall.com and you click on any of the links that would lead you towards the program, then, yeah, you could put your name on the wait list. So then you'll get information about the program as you're waiting, and you'll see the success stories from other riders that come from all kinds of disciplines. Because again, my fascination is really understanding that foundation of that tree trunk, that rider's mind, rider's body, horse's mind, horse's body, and then all the different branches that it can go out to. And it becomes more and more fun to be able to look around the horse industry and see the common threads, because to me, that's when it's just a bigger and bigger world of things I can do with my horses.
I can see how it would be so beneficial. So I'd really encourage people to check out your program, because if you had that weekly Zoom call, I think that would give somebody something really forward, you know, to go into this think tank, basically. I mean, you're leading it, but like all these people there, you can learn from, like you said, other people's problems.
It's such a gift you can give your horse if they look at you as helping to support them. So when I'm out trail riding, and I've been there, don't get me wrong, like my whole teenage years were spent where, you know, when I would pick up, my horse's perception of what I was doing was more like, don't interrupt me. versus now when I'm riding and I close my aids and I interact with my horse isn't shut down in the way that sometimes people will. I mean, it honestly does happen in the show world. You will see horses that I call robotic, and mm-hmm. That's not what I want. That's a choice that the rider gets to make, whether it is in the show arena or in your backyard or wherever you are. And I'm not after training robots. I don't want a horse that's hiding from my aids. And so when I'm out there and I see horses that are wrestling with their rider, although they're not hiding from the aids, they are using a lot of physical and mental, especially mental energy when they are in that state. Versus if I'm your dance partner and I reach out and I touch you and you feel that touch as a receptive helping an adjustment versus a punishment. Mm-hmm. And that is a life-changing gift to give to a horse.
I would just encourage everybody I think it could benefit them to look into a little extra training, because there is a lot of anxiety that can creep in. Taking your horse and camping away from home, having a veterinarian look at your horse and having them go over every inch of your horse, including the front end and the back end and the legs and everything. And some horses don't like that extra touch from a whole bunch of people around them. and being passed on the trail. And there's just so much opportunity to train our horses to be better at all of that.
You mentioned in the beginning, you know, your friend's horse learning, and I called it a habit pattern, when you were doing the interval training. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why I took my little high-energy horse, Willow, and didn't go, she's bred to be a reining horse, but I chose not to go directly to reining because I could see that that discipline was going to be a big mental stretch for her in the beginning. So I took her to traditional dressage and Western dressage. And because I already do interval training at home, whether it's in the arena or on the trail, because I do this, I call it up and down, like dialing up, dialing down, dialing in, dialing out. Like, so there's a relaxing and there's a focus. And because I'd already been doing that a lot at home, it only took her about, it happened in the first weekend, but I think I'd shown like three times in that weekend where she was pretty up being in that environment. But she realized that from at home, we would do, you know, trot work, canter work, and then come down and do a stretch walk. And she knew to look for that because I had told her that so many times at home, that in that new environment, when I went there, the first time I showed her, she wasn't so much looking for it. And then I kind of manually cued it. And then the second time, it was a little bit more. And the third time, I could feel her thinking, somewhere in here, there's a stretchy walk. Somewhere in here, there's a stretchy walk. And then when I allowed her to do the stretch down and out, she was like, there it is. And that's when I knew that she had crossed that bridge from the work at home to the arena work. But to me, the arena work, let's say I go in and that pattern takes me 5 or 6 minutes to do. That 5 or 6 minutes of riding a Western dressage test on my horse is a micro version of any longer ride. Mm-hmm. It's just that I can see all those transitions happening in this 5 minute period instead of over an hour or 5 hours of riding. And so that is a way to hone yourself in, but it's the coolest thing when your horse starts going, I know somewhere in here. And that's mm-hmm. when you can feel that habit pattern kicking in. And it's an amazing thing to train.
So thinking about the different audience we have listening, we have people who aren't in endurance anymore, but they enjoy the stories. We have people who are just starting out, and we have some experienced people that listen while they clean their stalls or drive. But for the person who has listened and they thought, you know, maybe I want to try this endurance thing, I think they could turn it into a training session if they go to the ride maybe with their horse with the intention of not competing. Go there and volunteer, but while they're in that environment, I think it would give them a huge step up to when they go to the ride and they actually compete, because it would take the pressure off the horse, it would take the pressure off the person to say, okay, this is how I'm going to pack, I'm setting things up, I'm going to volunteer, and I'm going to work my horse while I'm here, and work on that emotional piece so that when they come to their first event, a little bit of that is already, like the high emotions a little bit won't be so prevalent.
When I hear you describing it like that, to me, it's basically saying, what can we do for the rider's mind and then the practice so that you already understand the emotions that are going to be around there. You already understand the rhythm or the flow of the activity that's going to be around there. So I oftentimes tell people that if they have ever considered doing something, just get in your car and go drive and watch it. Like, I've been mm-hmm. talking about flying out and just watching the pieces of the Tevis. I just want to be a part of seeing a piece of the Tevis Cup, mm-hmm. which I'm very aware that there's not all these pieces you can see. Like, it's like, where are you going to pick to be to see just a fraction and feel the energy that's around an event like that? And so there is, I know that without having gone, that I don't know until I've gone, that I can mm-hmm. feel different versions of it. But it'd be so cool to put yourself in the environment and say, this is what that environment is like for me, even as a spectator or a volunteer. And then I can start getting closer to that energy, that excitement, that the challenges, the all of it. And I do that across the board, I recommend it all the time to people. I'm like, the first step you should take is go watch, go volunteer, go be around it.
Have you heard of OATS? It's in Ohio.
I was trying to remember what, when I ran into the rider the other day, she sent me several things. In passing, I've heard of things, but I definitely don't know it.
Usually in endurance, like there's the American Endurance Ride Conference, and that is the grandmother organization of endurance in the United States. And then there's regional clubs. Like in my region, it's UMECRA, Upper Midwest Endurance Riding Association. And then there's usually a state club, like DRAW in Wisconsin. It's Distance Riding Association of Wisconsin. And in Ohio, you have OATS. And if you go there, there'll be a calendar. And I bet you, I'm actually in Forest City, Illinois this weekend. There is the first ride of the year. It's called Early Bird. You might not have to fly so far. I understand wanting to go to Tevis. Mm-hmm. I want to go sometime too. You definitely could get a taste of endurance a little closer to home, a little sooner. And a lot.
Kelly wrote to me and said that the closest one to me would be at Wayne National Forest. And she said there's a ride there June, September, and November. And that there are the intro and the limited distance. And so, yeah, she hooked me up with some of that information. So I'll probably actually message her. And I find that my first step will probably be not only riding on my own, but actually just messaging and being like, hey, can I ride with you and pick mm-hmm. your brain while we go down the trail?
It is very addictive, mm-hmm. distance riding. It really is. The whole experience, the time being alone with your horse, the time camping with your horse, the idea that, you know, the trail, you're not so much competing against the other people. You're just exercising what you've done for conditioning, and you're racking up those miles. You're reaching for lifetime miles. And if you fall in with a good group of people, you know, that part of it becomes just really fulfilling also. So be warned. I'm just saying, be warned. It becomes quite the addictive sport. You might have to clear some of your calendar to put some endurance rides on there.
Well, since I literally picked where I live so I could be out on the trails, I could see this as a potential issue.
Oh, no. Denny Emerson, he gave you the gateway drug. go start logging miles. So, yeah. But to close this out, I just wanted to thank you for being on here. It was an honor to have you on the show today. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I am deeply sorry about hearing about your mare, Lucy, and losing her. And did you say you named her baby Lefty because of the white
Lefty.
Because of the marking on the foot?
Yes. So, yes, he has two, his left front and left rear are both white. So my first thought was Lefty because he had the marking on both left. Mm-hmm. And then his mother's name was Lucy, and it wasn't until later that somebody mentioned that when you're learning as a child to open and close something, they'll say righty-tighty, lefty-Lucy. Mm-hmm. And so then it became even more fitting.
I know that you took a trip over to Last Chance Corral and picked up another orphan baby to be buddies with Lefty. Mm-hmm. We recently had Victoria on here, not trying to push them on the endurance community, but I wanted to make sure that they knew that, you know, that Victoria is there and that there are foals who need homes. But so how is it going with your new arrival from Victoria's and with Lefty?
Good. I mean, I did this before. I've actually got I've got a horse that I adopted from there in 2016, and he's about 16 too. He's actually really fun to ride on the trails because he's a thoroughbred Appaloosa Percheron cross. Mm. And so it's going well. I mean, it's got its ups and downs because they're just so little, and Lefty was a preemie, so he's had a few additional challenges. And again, I'm just getting to learn a lot of things about, I didn't know you could do glue on shoes with a foal that young and all these different things, but they are a ton of work and they are very rewarding and funny and a lot of work.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, and we'll reconnect soon.
You are very welcome, and I look forward to our next conversation.